You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
What's up, Goat Flippers? It's your host, Lurk, and thanks for checking out this episode of Lamb Goat's Van Flip Podcast. Welcome to episode 51. We are officially on the climb to episode 100. I wonder how long it'll take us to get there. Hopefully not that long. How's the beginning of spring treating you guys? I actually did a very strange thing over this past weekend. I became an ordained minister a few months ago, and I officiated my sister's wedding this weekend in Georgia. It was very crazy. I never thought I would do something like that. I even tried to back out about a month ago because it was kind of stressful and I didn't want to do it because I didn't want to ruin the wedding, but nonetheless, knocked it out, and it was a great time. But other than that, you know, baseball started, so spring's kicking off. I don't know if you're into baseball, but I personally am. I'm actually watching a game right now, but hey, let's kick it into this episode. If this is your first time tuning into the show, we greatly appreciate you checking it out. Don't forget, if you dig the content, to follow us or subscribe. And if you can give us the highest rating on the platform you're listening, it greatly helps us out in the podcast algorithm. And special kudos if you are a returning listener. With your support, we continue to do the podcast, so we appreciate it. Visit lambgoat.com for everything hardcore and metal related. Like Lambgoat on Facebook and follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Lambgoat. Visit the Lambgoat YouTube page for all of these episodes in video format, plus other Lambgoat video content. And make sure you subscribe and hit the alert bell so you're always notified when new episodes or content is uploaded. And if you want to follow me, the host Lurk, on social media, you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at LurkCity, LURKCITY. Check out Lambgoat's monthly Spotify playlist, New Metal Monthly. You can find it in the show notes, along with all the other links from the episode. I can't think of a better way to set off the next 50 episodes of the Van Flip other than having Zao kick that off. Now, Zao has been a cornerstone of the metalcore community for 20 plus years. They also have a new album coming out this Friday. April 9th. So check that out. It's called The Crimson Corridor. They're self-releasing it. So let's go hit that episode.
Oh, yeah. What's this? Feel this. Oh yeah, this is Oh no. Lamb Goat presents the Van Flip Podcast.
Welcome back, Van Flippers, Lamb Goaters, whatever you want to call yourselves. It's not every day that we get to have one of the, I don't know if you want to call them pillars, but definitely someone who's influenced the metalcore scene as much as this band has. We don't normally get to have that kind of caliber of band on the podcast. So we are blessed today and graced with the members of Zao. Jeff and Scott, welcome to the show. Thank you for taking time out of today and joining us.
Our pleasure.
No problem at all.
Where are you guys coming from today? I know you're separate. For those who aren't watching, mm-hmm. You guys are not in the same area. The band is originally from West Virginia, relocated to Philadelphia. But where are you guys calling? Where are you at today?
I'm actually like 30 minutes outside of Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I'm in Brooklyn.
Okay.
Pretty much everybody's pretty much around Pittsburgh right now.
So, yeah.
Except me.
Cool. So. And you guys have a new album coming out in like a couple weeks here. This will probably be played closer to that time, but it's a follow-up to your last 2016 full-length Well-Intentioned Virus. So what can we expect from the Crimson Corridor? Because like I know you guys sent me the album literally like 2 days ago, and I haven't had time to check it out, other than the single. So, but like, what can we expect, you know, on the record that would be different from the 2016 release or anything like that?
Oh, man.
Because on some of your EPs, I would say, you kind of explored some kind of like programming and other kind of dynamics tossed in. So I was wondering if that's going to carry over or into the new record.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's, I would say the biggest difference between this and Well-Intentioned Virus is I think well-intentioned virus was very, we purposely made it very direct. It was a very direct, quick, you know, just kind of rocking record, you know, succinct little 40-minute standard. I think the biggest difference with this one is we just take our time with stuff. It's a lot moodier, a lot of slower stuff, like not necessarily like ballads, but I mean, there is elements of that, but it's a, no, like I said, we're not in a hurry on these songs. So they tend to stretch out and it's like more of a journey. But there's a lot of sort of like ambience and soundscapes and sound manipulation kind of buried in the mix. It's a lot more layered. It's okay. A little bit more like a mini movie.
And is that
yeah,
because
I think,
go ahead, sorry. Go ahead, Scott.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. This is always going to happen. I feel bad. I'm always going to step on somebody.
We're three-way in.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think Jeff kind of hit that. It's very cinematic. It definitely still has, like, burners on it, but overall there's, like, a really cool, like mood set with everything, and it does feel very, you know, movie-esque, like, the way it begins and ends, and there's, like, all kinds of different things in the middle. I think there's a lot of places we kind of went that we always wanted to go. I don't think anything's going to feel like out of place, but I definitely feel like people will be like, oh, that's different. But in reality, I feel like we've kind of been moving in this direction for a little while. So we're really excited to see how it goes.
Yeah, it's awesome. I would assume.
I would say that go ahead.
No, go ahead, Jeff. By all means.
No. Well, no, I just wanted to spin off something Scott said that like it's everything on the record has pretty much existed at some point in the language of Zayo.
Yeah,
we just kind of really sat on things that in the past might have been like, oh, they did this thing for 30 seconds, and then we never heard that again. Like, there's a lot of we really dove back into aspects of the band that had gotten not explored yet.
Cool. It's always curious. I mean, obviously you're going to still have some traditional Zayo sounding riffage. I mean, you guys are kind of like a riff heavy band for your, I don't know, you guys have been, the band in general has been around for 30 years almost now. So you know, traditionally the band is like a riffing band. So when you say it's like a little longer drawn out, you're not saying that the riffs are gone or anything like that. It's just
no,
like a longer song in general.
No.
Yeah. I actually think that there are aspects of this record that is like some of the heaviest stuff we've ever done. It's really hard to explain it in a way that like, there's not really a good like language to say. Cause like they are like songs are kind of like, they take more time to like get to where they want to go, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're slow, but they are, there's like a little bit more of like a mid pace level to some of the stuff. There are things that we've done that are very melodic on here, but at the same time, like some of the melodic songs are broken up with like some of the most violent sounding riffs that we have ever done. I mean, I really do think that what this record to me did was like, I feel like there's a maturity level in the writing that like really allowed some of the songs to breathe, but there are songs on here that are just as heavy and violent as anything we've ever written.
And it's not like unheard of for you guys to have tracks that are a little off, off pace of Zayo. So it's cool. Like I definitely was revisiting the catalog this week and I noticed that on the EP, Xenophobe is the song that I'm thinking, or Xenophile is the song that I'm thinking of, but on Xenophobe, that song was one of like the first kind of songs that I can kind of remember where there's a groove, like a really cool drum groove going on with like some beat production or drum machines. Is that something that you guys, and again on this record that you have soundscapes and other things, you know, involved in the ambiance and stuff, do you guys program that stuff yourself or do you have people coming in? I mean, because Jeff, you do the drums, so I don't know if you program those drums and then, you know, write those grooves around it.
It depends on which version of Xenophobe you're talking about. Yeah, because there is the remix of Xenophobe that's all programmed.
Right.
The original song, that's all played.
Okay.
And there is stuff that we've done occasionally. I know there was the one song, was that on, I always get stuck because I think of our working titles. I Saw the End. There's like a section where it sounds like a drum machine or something that kicks in for just like six beats. But that was just more sound manipulation that we did to the actual drum parts.
That makes sense.
So on this thing, like when I say there's like a lot of like, yeah, that might have been it.
Yeah, because I was listening to it on Spotify.
Other than the remixes, there hasn't been.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense. Because that's why I asked that question about, extra kind of production going involved in the new record. Because when I'm listening to it on Spotify, it says that album came out in 2019. But, the actual the EP came out in 2016. So I was like, oh, maybe that's just when Spotify put it on the record.
Yeah.
So I think what we...
Yeah, there was a remix.
Yeah. So when you listen, that remix album is specifically centered around like electronic music.
Right. No, that makes sense.
Now, there's nothing like everything on the new record, straight up real drums and us playing it. But there are things that are going on in the background that have... Maybe their basis starts in electronic music, but it really doesn't have that so much as like more of like a landscape or a soundscape or ambience, or there's nothing really in there that's like, I mean, dude, there's some stuff on that remix that it's like dancey.
Yeah.
So there's nothing. Yeah. We didn't like kind of get too much into that world, but what we did do is like have like, you know, your normal real live instrument song. And then Jeff or, you know, we had a couple people help us, but like a lot of the stuff Jeff did was like background, just noises or sounds that would kind of add to the feel of what was happening. So that's more of what I think we're talking about with this new one.
Interesting. Okay. When you guys say that you guys, slow it down and everything like that, or let it breathe, would you consider it more of like a doom kind of sound, like that kind of vibe? Or is it just like a slower down metalcore version of.
I think there's definitely there's doom.
There is some stuff that gets a little doomy. But it's like, again, it's like that the single that we already released, Croatone, to us was one of the ones that was like, oh, this is like a little more doomy. I remember we put up a snippet of it and somebody said, oh, it sounds like you guys have been listening to a lot of the band Earth. Mm. And it was just like, yeah, I can hear that. Like, so yep. It was, and that's a good example of one of those songs where the bulk of the song is just like kind of really like just kind of spaced out, you know, glacial kind of heaviness. And then eventually the Zao that people know come out of that. Mm-hmm. We just tend to sit on some of those parts longer. There's a 10-minute song on this one.
Oh, okay.
And it's, and it's probably not, it's most of it probably doesn't sound like what you would think Zao would be.
It has
elements of everything we've always done. So
it was a little dark. The single was a little darker than, I kind of remember you guys being in the past and stuff like that, but not in a negative way. Obviously, the sound, like the doom sound is getting into a lot of other genres and it's becoming kind of popular in general. So it's cool. I mean, and again, you guys have been a band for 30 years. You can't just keep rehashing the same thing over and over again. So like when you guys write new albums, like how hard is it for you guys to come up with ideas for the project, Zao? Or do you guys have like a specific mindset when you're writing music for the band?
And I don't know if I think, and this sounds sort of cliched, but like we never go into anything with like, here's what we have to do. Usually what happens is, we'll just get ideas and they'll just usually come from as much of a like natural place as possible. And then we just build on those ideas. Like I've never, and that's the nice thing about the band is I think we've done so much different stuff. I mean, we literally have things that sound like Converge, and then we have a song that sounds like the Rolling Stones. Like there's, you can like kind of do whatever. And I think what we never try to box ourselves in, but it's just kind of like whatever the mood is, So like with Croatoan, that song, it just, that main riff was the first thing I wrote for that song, and it just kind of structured the rest of the song. Like, it, you kind of have that feel of what's going to feel right, and then, you know, it'll be built, it'll be kind of picked apart. Jeff will come in and we'll have all these different ideas to like kind of move the song in the way it needs to go. But we try really, really hard. Like, I mean, all of us listen to so much different stuff. And obviously all of us like doom metal and all that kind of thing. I mean, the older you get, the less you're into like maybe the most, like the more chaos. But I think we try really hard to not let that stuff infiltrate to the point where it's like overtly obvious that we're like trying to do something. But those, we use that as influences on everything we do. So we try really hard to be influenced, but not overtly like on like the hard, the show on the sleeve, like here's what it is, you know? But I think we just try, I try really hard to just let the song speak for itself and not really like force it anywhere. And force any type of thing, just let it naturally happen and let it go where it wants to go. Which sounds like bullshit, but that's what we try to do.
We've also gotten really good lately about just sort of selective editing. You know, like a couple of the songs in this record have been floating around for years. And it's not that we didn't like them. It's just we were waiting till they had a home. So we're a lot more patient with material now, where we're like, okay, this song doesn't have a place. We'll set it aside until it has a place. Mm-hmm. And that's how you end up with an hour-long record eventually.
I think
when you have a bunch of pieces that fit together, it doesn't bother you.
Yeah. I do think, too, that – I mean, we might be one of the last genres of music, like our whole scene, that still look at albums as albums too. So like a lot of people, like in the music industry, I would assume that a lot of people are looking for like either singles or like, because of how Spotify works and Apple, right. And all that different stuff. Like, but like we really do want to like have full experiences with like an album still. Like that's kind of, our like main focus has always been, how will this record work on with somebody that's sitting in their front of their record player and listening to it on vinyl? You know, we all like vinyl's kind of like our whole arbiter of how we write, like how we set up our records. So like we're still thinking of it as albums, where maybe a lot of people don't do that anymore. But I do think that like our style of music, a lot of the bands do that. You know, a lot of the bands still, like the whole experience of sitting through a whole album is very important. So like Jeff said, sometimes songs will be done and it doesn't fit in that, how we want that album to feel. So it'll be held back, not thrown out, just held back.
Is that, and again, you guys had like a kind of, you guys didn't really release a lot of full lengths between like 2009 and the, and you know, you had a lot of extended plays. Was that because you guys had material left over like that? Like some songs didn't fit the albums you previously released before that time period, and you just had kind of like this material that you kind of just wanted to get out?
I don't
sort of. I mean, well,
I don't remember.
It was
how...
weird.
Go ahead, Jeff. Yeah. Sorry.
What happened was a lot of the big break that we had after 2009, we were still writing and exchanging ideas, and we were trying to figure out, are we going to be our own label? You know, are we going to record stuff and then shop it to something? Like, how are we going to do this? And it got to the point where when we did this stuff that ended up becoming Well-Intentioned Virus, the Xenophobe 7-inch, the Pyrrhic Victory EP, all that different stuff, what we did was we started the tracking for everything at one time. And that's what we do now. Like a lot of times we'll record a giant batch of material, like enough for almost two records. And then once we get it started, then we whittle away and we're like, this is the album. This is going to be a 5-song EP because these 5 songs work together. These 2 are going to be on a 7-inch. There's this random one here. Oh, let's find someone to do a split with. So all the material's in play. And after we start it, we figure out what makes sense. How do these things group? How do they, how does each little release tell a story? So it's not necessarily like B-side. Like for us, an EP isn't stuff that wasn't good enough for the record. The EP is like, okay, well, this is an EP. These five songs have a statement. So that's what these are. But yeah, it's all plotted out as we're finishing stuff. And once we get to that point, like we're like, this is everything we have to work with. Now, how do we organize it? Mm-hmm. Okay. Sometimes our favorite songs end up on the little limited 7 inches.
Yeah,
like that might be our favorite song, but it doesn't fit on the record.
Right.
Now,
we
know that the album will get more attention.
But, I didn't want it to come across like those weren't good enough for the record. But like you said, they didn't fit in the record. So,
but that is a big misconception and you're not wrong. Like that is a big misconception. And we found a lot of music industry people, they're like, well, it's an EP. It's the stuff that wasn't as good. And we're just like, well, we don't think of it that way. Like necessarily. It's just, it happens to be an EP.
So I've got two more questions about the, album coming out. One of them is from, I'll ask you, the easy one. First, what is your favorite song to play personally for you on the new record? Because you both play different instruments. So what is your favorite song to play off the album?
Wow. Honestly, I think the two that are going to be released are the ones that are my favorite to play so far. But we haven't really got in a room as a full band to like play them yet. So like, but I think the Croatoan is, I'm really excited to play that one with everybody. And then the song that's going to be coming out here this week, which I don't want to say it wrong because now I forget. But yeah, like those two songs.
Ship of Theseus.
Theseus. Yes.
Good. You know what? Perfect transition after this. So continue with what you're saying. Cause that was about the next question is about that song. So
yeah. But yeah, those two songs right now, cause we did have some like, odd type of rehearsals. Like since Jeff's in Brooklyn and all the rest of us are here, we've been able to kind of like get together with the four of us and play. Luckily I have Jeff's like drum, like performance. So we can play to that. And those two songs have been super fun to get together. But like I said, we haven't played it as a full band, which probably is going to be even cooler.
Yeah. Jeff, yours?
I'm excited for Croatoan too, because it's one of those songs. And it's one of the main reasons that I always fight to keep Lies of Serpents in the set. There's just certain types of songs, like the way the notes hit. And like sometimes it's just really simple, open notes that just have so much weight when you play them on stage, like where you can like kind of feel the air move the way that all the just the frequencies and stuff. Lies of Serpents has that. We hit those first two notes of Lies of Serpents. I don't care how bad the sound in the club is or in the monitors or whatever. That song always sounds good. And it just, it's bad PA system proof. And to me, Croatoan is kind of set up that way because it's just this big open, you know, it just sounds massive without there being a lot of notes. And so Croatoan to me is one that I'm really looking forward to. I don't look forward to Ship of Theseus because that song, it's a motherfucker for my feet. It's probably the fastest Zayo like double bass drum part yet. And it doesn't really let up.
Interesting.
It's almost like it almost verges into death metal bass drum territory. So I'm just not looking forward to it from an endurance and my aching joint.
It sucks when you do those parts, you know, those cool parts that are super hard and you record them, but then you got to kind of, well, it hasn't been that bad because of obviously a pandemic, but you haven't had to play anything, but you know, playing tough.
Well, I mean, and it's when Scott does demos for stuff, like he'll send me ideas with like very basic you know, like I wrote this song and he'll send like very basic drum parts for riffs. And a lot, sometimes he'll be like, we need to keep this. And other times he's like, let it go. But I remember when he sent me that one and I'm just like, oh, Scott, I hate you. I hate you. I have to play this now. Yeah, there was no way around it. It was the only part I could do. And I'm like, I got to do this now.
That's hilarious. So the other part, the other question comes from one of our reviewers on the website, the one actually reviewing your guys' album. So he was asking about the ship of, I don't want to say, what is it? The Theseus.
Theseus.
And he was asking if that's a reference to yourselves. The thought experiment applies to the fact that they have no original members in the band. So I don't know if that is about
it. Was Theseus is absolutely 100% self-referential. Yeah.
Yes.
From Dan. That's.
Yep. Yeah, I guess would be someone to ask the person who wrote the lyrics, but.
We talked about it with him and he, you know, it is kind of a cool thought experiment, and where you end up isn't always necessarily where you think. So the thought experiment is that with the ship, if you change all the boards of the ship, is the ship still the same ship because it's all new boards? But when you change a board on a ship, like not all at one time, when you're like fixing pieces or changing out pieces over time, the ship does have all new boards, but it's still maintained the same ship. So like with what we look at it as is, you know, the band has went through so not as many as a lot of other bands though, let's be honest, but you know, our band has somehow looked at that it has gone through so many member changes, but those member changes were so gradual. And I think that the way I look at it is, the band is still pretty similar to what we were when I joined in 1999. So like, I do think that the band really did change from that original incarnation to when Brett, Russ, and Dan came in. But I don't think that the band is so far away from what it was when I joined it, because it's still me, Russ, and Dan involved. Then we have, you know, Jeff and Marty with us now. So the way I look at it is, I don't think the ship does turn into a new ship. I think the band just fortifies itself, makes it anew, and maybe even now it's better, mm-hmm. you know, in certain ways. But I don't think that it like gets rid of or, you know, I don't think it like totally absolves the old band. I think that that old band is still with us, sort of. But yeah, I don't look at it like as like a whole. Are we even the same band? But it's a cool thought experiment to do that.
Well, and then the part of the thought experiment that I like that people leave out sometimes is, what if you take all those old discarded boards and build a new ship out of them? Which one is the real ship?
Oh,
curveball. Yeah. So it goes into a different level.
Yeah.
Yep.
Which my original plan, which I got a big kick out of, is we put out an archival release last fall of like demos and unreleased stuff from the original band, even back to original singer Eric Reeder. And when that was initially being proposed, it was going to come out after this record. This record was scheduled to come out first. So when I was just like, oh, this is perfect timing, because in my mind, we were going to put out the Ship of Theseus song mentioning this concept, and then we were going to put out a record by the original band after that, which was going to just tie the whole thing together. It just ended up coming out backwards.
His question.
We're definitely aware. Right. We're definitely aware.
Yeah. Cool.
Well, that was the whole point.
Yep. He will love that answer, I'm sure. So that's cool. But speaking of, you know, getting into that topic, I was going to bring it up at some point, because you guys, I mean, this has been the longest running lineup of the band in general. It's been, like you said, you joined in 99, Scott, mm-hmm. Jeff, like 2000, I mean, 20 years. So, right?
2005?
With 2005?
Yeah, 2005. Yeah.
Okay. So my question about...
Right after Funeral of God came out.
Okay. Yep. Yeah, and even more so for you, Jeff. But my question is, like, Kazeo was all, you know, it was around for, you know, years before you even joined Scott. So, like, how was it? Because normally, you know, I get to talk to people that have had members come into their band. We don't necessarily interview the new members, and obviously not your new members or anything like that. But what was it like coming into an established band? And I guess we'll start with you, Scott, because you came in earlier and you were on, you know, some pivotal releases following your coming into the band. So what's it like coming into a band that's kind of established already? And like, as a new person, like, are you worried about like how much writing you'll get to do? Or are you just stoked to be a part of this, you know, band and everything?
I'll tell you, honestly, I remember when I joined, Zeta was like right on the, like it was on the edge of like sort of breaking. Cause like Blood and Fire definitely opened up the band to everything. And there was a huge momentum from that record. And then all the things that happened with Brett leaving and all that. When I joined, I was really, really excited about the opportunity to step into a band that was on its way somewhere. But we still, like, when I joined, I mean, Zaya was still playing to like 20 people. I mean, it wasn't an automatic, like, I joined and it was like, holy shit, we're playing in front of 500 people. You know, we still, it was really still building and building and building. So I think I felt like I came in right at a great time because it wasn't, I still had to work with everybody. And another thing that was great about joining it was my relationship with Russ. I mean, I've known Russ since ninth grade in high school. So we always kind of, I'm trying to think of the word. We always sort of like meshed together really well as friends. We were really close friends. We liked each other's playing styles. We both were in bands that both each of us kind of liked. And, you know, we had a really good friendship and a really good like relationship, even musically, because we liked a lot of the same stuff. So when I joined, I didn't feel that I was the new guy that wasn't allowed to have any input. Mm-hmm. These guys, when I joined, they were really, really open. You know, nobody was ever, there wasn't any like horrible, like personality that like wanted to take charge. Like Jesse and Russ and everybody was like really, really like open and excited about anything that I would add. You know, but I felt, I was like, look, I'm not going to come in here and try to like take over or anything. I came in. And we all worked together really, really well. And that's like one thing with Zayo that did get overshadowed a little bit because so much of the drama that gets talked about from the band. But like when we were writing, really rarely was it bad. I mean, it was always pretty, really comfortable. Like everybody was excited. And there were times when people would do things that maybe each of us didn't like. But overall, like we were really behind each other and positive reinforcement on riffs and parts and really worked hard together as a unit. So I never felt that way. And I think that when I joined with Liberate, like it really did, it still took a good like year or two for the band to like get to the point where we were like, this is a band that we do. You know, because like when I joined, I was still working two jobs. And then we'd play on the weekends, like yeah. Stuff like that. It was a grind.
Yeah,
it was a grind for a good year and a half. Because even with Blood and Fire, I mean, I would talk to Brett about this, and Russ would tell me about shows that they would do. I mean, there's this like look back and nostalgia of Blood and Fire, but those guys were fucking busting their ass. Dude, they were playing in like barns and with 10 people, you know, like, and then they would do like big festivals where there'd be a couple hundred thousand people. And then a lot of the pictures you see or a lot of the videos you see are those big festivals, but man, they were playing like some bullshit Indiana place with 20 people there and nobody even knew what the shit was going on. So that there was a lot of buildup, even after all that stuff, that we really had to work really hard to get to where the band did eventually get to.
Yeah, you were definitely a part of the grinding years, you know, the late 80s.
There we go. That's better.
There you go.
Let's get a little dark.
Yeah, usually Alex is guilty of that. He'll be down in his basement and we'll start a podcast. The next thing you know, he's like, all you see is the glare off his glasses in the computer screen or something. It's like Mr. Hand of Inspector Gadget or something. But you were a part of obviously the grind years for sure. And and because like the scene was also just becoming like within that time period, just like a real thing. So yeah, like when you joined Jeff, like did you feel any kind of I have to earn my place to supply music, just because like Zayo already had like a sound technically at that point too. So
yeah, I mean, it was actually kind of the opposite. I felt the opposite. Like again, I've known these guys since we were in like high school.
Yep.
The first time I ever played or traveled with the band, I joined 2 weeks before we flew to Europe. I actually never even played in a room with Dan until we kicked off Rising End at the first show in Germany. Mm-hmm. That was the first time I ever played Zayo music with Dan, was on stage at a show in Germany. Like it was like that quick. Like I rehearsed with the other guys, Dan couldn't be at the two rehearsals, and then we flew to Europe and I was in the band. But I knew them all. Like we all knew each other. We're all from the same hometown.
Yep.
It was like, it was so, I never felt like the new guy thing. Cause like even on the, you know, on the plane or, you know, in the tour bus in Europe, we're all just like, we're talking about like, you know, gossip about people in the hometown and like, oh, did you hear what so-and-so from high school's up to? Like, it was like, I never had that new guy thing. Musically, I remember it was like the opposite. It was like, I played with Russ and Marty the first time. I don't think, Scott, you were there. And I remember with Russ and Marty. We did a couple songs just to see if it was going to work. And Marty called me. He's like, I thought it was great. I called Dan. And Dan's like, I'm glad Jeff's in it. Now, maybe now we can play at zero. Like, it turned into like, oh, Jeff's able to do the like really fast, grindy stuff. Let's like bring that in. And it was... So I immediately were like, oh, you can do these things. Let's do that. When we were writing The Fear within the first year of when I joined, and Scott and I were just trading tapes back and forth and giving, you know, I was giving him input, and it was the same way it is now. Like seamless. It was seamless.
Well, that's,
I was also lucky with that. I didn't have to be the guy to replace Jesse. I also didn't have that pressure. Stephen Peck buffered that.
Right. Yeah. For those like a year and a half, 2 years.
Well, I think too, like a lot of the reason why Jeff was, I mean, Jeff is a guy that's been on our radar since, I mean, we were all fans of his band in high school. So like we all knew what Jeff could do. And when Dan mentioned, well, we should talk to Jeff about joining, we were already like, well, we know what Jeff could do. So like we knew that his abilities, his writing abilities, like all that stuff would mesh with us really well. So when he came in, there wasn't like a weird, like there wasn't a phase of the band where we were like, well, is Jeff going to be? No, we already knew. And we had Jeff join specifically because we knew. So. Right.
Well, that's awesome. Cause you know, most times you kind of get the vibe when like a band that has been somewhat established in general gets new members. I always wonder like how much does that person worry about changing the band, you know, changing the sound of the band or whatever. So, you know, I don't get to talk to people that have come into the band at some point, but obviously you guys have been there for like 20 years almost. So are you know, Scott's 20 years, but Jeff almost.
And so. I think there's a lot to be said too. And I've worked with other bands that I've dealt with where, you know, where there are member changes. And it also depends on how you do it. Like, you're going to be successful if you don't try to force the new member to mimic the old member and to like tread that line. Like, you pick somebody that will fit with what you already do, but you also, it's going to be successful if you let them bring to the table their personality.
Yeah.
You know, like that's what's going to make it succeed. That's what's going to, and I, you know, it's like, look at Iron Maiden. Like when they brought Bruce Dickinson in, they weren't asking him to be Paul Di'Anno. They said, be Bruce Dickinson. And that's why it worked. Because he, you know, he's doing his thing.
Yeah, that's true. So let's kind of change gears a little bit. I was going to ask, you know, about Furnace Fest, but kind of dawned on me that, Scott, you may be the only person in the room that have even been to a Furnace Fest. So are you excited to be a part of that again? And, like, what was it like playing those first few Furnace Fest, you know, 20-something years ago? And, you know, who are you looking for? I mean, you can both answer this question. Who are you looking forward to seeing at this current or the one coming up?
Oh, wow. Yeah, the first one was really, man.
Because some of us only live through YouTube clips. I mean, I've watched the DVD back in the day. And because I was just out of high school when that really started happening. I was probably a senior just out of high school when Furnace Fest started happening. But it was the closest one in general. And I years later, I did make it to like Hellfest. I went to the last Hellfest that happened. So
yeah, those were super fun too.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think that those festivals just they have an automatic like wow factor to them because of what it is. I mean, you have all the different bands and the shows are, I mean, even for the bands, it's like overwhelming because you have so many people that are there. So it's really like, overwhelming is kind of what it felt like for me. That first one was just so unbelievable. I mean, my distinct memory of it, and I remember talking to Dan about this at the show, we headlined the one night and we headlined over Sick of It All. And I remember telling, I was like looking at Dan going, how the fuck are we headlining over Sick of It All? Like, this doesn't make any sense.
Right.
And that was back when like, it was weird. And like, it was just me and Russ, we'd have a bass player and it was whatever. And, but I mean, it was just, there was such magic in those type of things. Cause when you're in the moment, I'm sure like all of us understand this, but like when you're in a moment like that, you don't really understand how to appreciate the moment. And then like once the moment's passed and you look back at it, you know, what's special about it? You know, it's unbelievable to have been a part of that thing and like get to witness it and all the friends we made from it and all the different bands we got to see that like don't even exist anymore. I mean, there's so many things that's just so amazing about it. And yeah, honestly, like it's sort of unfair because as long as Furnace Fest does go according like to plan and it doesn't have to be canceled or moved or whatever. The fact that this is going to be like the first thing we've done for the year and a half or whatever of this pandemic is going to like almost be too much to handle. Like, I don't even know how I'm going to be able to be on stage. Like, I might cry because it's just insane to think about that.
Yeah.
But I like excited isn't even the word for it. Like, I'm so overly excited about playing it and I cannot wait. I mean, I'm so excited. Like the day that we play, Converge is playing, Every Time I Die is playing, Cave-In's playing. Cave-In has been one of my favorite bands forever. So like seeing Cave-In, like so many friends too. Like there's so many friends bands that are playing that I can't wait to see like all those people.
Oh yeah, because you haven't seen anyone really, you know. Most people haven't like seen anyone. Yeah.
Dude, you're gonna like this will be the first I think for a lot of people, this is gonna be the first time. I mean, I know that there's some states that are opening up a little bit and like some of the clubs are possibly opening up to like certain like smaller capacities, but this is probably gonna be the first like real thing like this that a lot of the bands that are playing have got to do. And I think it's gonna be like what's gonna suck about it, it's gonna probably feel like 5 seconds of your life because it's going to just be so exciting. But I can't wait. I'm going to try to soak every freaking second of it in because like I said, all the bands that are playing the same day we are. I can't wait.
Jeff.
Well, unfortunately for me, it'll be 10 seconds because I have to do it twice in the same day.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm really excited for it as well. I was looking forward to it last year and, I was really bummed when they got, you know, postponed indefinitely. Mm-hmm. You know, who knew, up until recently, until they kind of announced everything that it was still on. But I'm very, very appreciative that most of the bands are still on there. Yeah. I know they threw everyone a curveball and not having Poison the Well on there, and everyone.
Oh yeah, I'm so happy they're playing.
They're there now.
Yeah, they're there now. Yeah. But
yep, I'm so glad they got back on. Yep.
That's a big one, man. You know, they like you guys, they also kind of helped mold that whole metalcore scene.
Oh yeah.
And they're just they're a band that I hope they kind of not get it together, but they all kind of at some point want to start playing again. I really do hope that they're one of my favorite bands, and I like a lot of those bands from back in those early, you know, metalcore years, just like yourself. So it'd be really good to have like another pillar back, you know what I mean? Because
oh yeah,
certain bands, like you said, well, dude, Every Time I Die and everything, they still,
yeah, I can't believe that Cave-In's like back. Yeah. I'm still like in shock that Cave-In's like legitimately back.
Yeah, they're doing some stuff.
Well, I mean, Cave-In was playing a little bit before even the Furnace Fest thing.
Yeah, they released a new record and they were like playing shows. So yeah, the fact that they're like kind of back as a band is really exciting.
Yeah.
And yeah, all that stuff. Like, we're such fans of all of it. You know, like, there's so many bands that I really like. And honestly, too, like, just people, like, I think all of us are really, I just love meeting new people, hanging out with old friends, like all that stuff's so important.
Yeah. You know, there's got to be something said about those early festivals. Cause like, if we really want to think about it, I mean, you would know more so than probably anyone in this chat here, Scott, but how was it run? Like, it seems like it was just a bunch of like young 20 somethings booking these shows, right? That would be day-long festivals with all these bands. And it was really like, to me, when I look back, it was ahead of its time, because then like the festival scene started becoming a big thing. But that was 10 years plus after like Hellfest and after, mm-hmm. you know, Furnace Fest and Cornerstone and all these other festivals that hardcore and metal were already kind of doing.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way. Like, it almost felt like it was a clusterfuck all the time. But for some weird reason, it always worked out.
Yeah.
And I think the most recent show or the most recent festival that we did that felt how the old festivals feel was probably This Is Hardcore in Philly. Cause like, not that it was, I mean, those guys are on it. Like, it's definitely like done unbelievably well, but it felt how those old festivals were. Cause like, I don't know. There's some, like, we've played New England Metal Fest, right? And New England Metal Fest, when we first started playing them, were pretty open, pretty cool. And like, everything would be like, it didn't, maybe the difference for me is this, like, it didn't matter what stage you played. It didn't matter how big your band was. Everybody was sort of like an equal. So like, you could walk around and like the headliner of that day, you would probably just see hanging out outside.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden all this shit happens. And like, now fucking whatever band's so big that's headlining Metal Fest, like, you're not allowed near the stage when they play, or you're not allowed near their dressing room. Dude, we're playing three ahead of you. How the fuck are we not allowed?
Yeah, like, right.
So like, that kind of shit has always driven me nuts. And I think This Is Hardcore was one of those festivals where like, it didn't matter what stature your band was. Like, if you were a headliner, or if you were an opener, like, everybody had the same place to set their merch up. Everybody had the same place to hang out. That's the kind
everybody
of
literally
like.
Used the same gear.
Yeah.
Everybody used the same gear. They're like, we have a back line. You walk
and this
on
is what
drummers
you're doing.
Bring your snare, your cymbals. These are the amps, go.
Nice.
And like, everybody was in the same boat. And it was one of the easiest, most stress-free festivals I played ever.
Furnace Fest will be like the kind of that vibe, but
I think that goes back to that. And I think, to me, you know, on the other side of it, watching Furnace Fest over the years, to me, like, Furnace Fest was this thing that it always seemed to me like it was sort of cobbled together by accident at the beginning and ended up being like this huge thing. And it never lost that spirit.
Yeah.
And I would say almost, I would almost argue that I think for a lot of bands, Furnace Fest is what made them.
Yeah.
Like, you know, because of just this massive community descending on this one place, and it, and then all those people like going back to wherever they were from, like, and then taking that band back with them. And everybody just in that era and that scene, like something like Furnace Fest, like you said, Scott, like those kind of shows, that was the biggest show you played. And then the next couple nights you're playing to 20 people in, you know, a barn or a VFW or a house show or whatever it happened to be. And I think what changed in the scene later on was when everybody, you had those couple bands that really broke it. Like those bands that really, like people like Under Oath, or, you know, I don't think they were ever really part of the Furnace thing, but like some, a band like
Andrew WK.
He's a, well, Andrew WK was always destined for greatness because
yes.
I mean, that's just on. That's a memory on the DVD and everything like that. You know, it was a big, I think it was a big people moment for the fest.
it was anything Andrew WK does is a big moment for anybody. but what ended up happening was all these bands that, like, things like Furnace Fest that were, and I'm not saying this about like Under Oath or Killswitch or any of the bands that got really big that were from that era, and that it became there were certain like labels and people in the industry that were like, we want this all the time. And then bands are like, oh, so this other, like these bands, like they're playing these huge shows all the time. They're like selling all these records. And it became this thing where for ages, like is some of these bands from that scene, you were happy to sell 10,000 records and play to 200 people a night.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like that's all anyone ever expected.
Yeah.
And then like, I remember we were on that, like, I forget what tour we were on. It was when that one Under Oath record came out. And they, like, got to, like, number two on Billboard. And I remember all the, some of the other bands on the tour that we were on the tour with at the time were like, oh, man, like, how are we ever going to live up to this? And I'm like, why do you feel you need to?
Yeah.
Like, I think that's what changed in the industry. And that's a big thing I noticed between hardcore festivals and stuff like Furnace or even This Is Hardcore and metal fests, is that at metal festivals, there's a lot of ego.
Yeah.
Everyone's like, oh, I'm a star.
I could get that.
And I think something like Furnace Fest, at Furnace Fest, a lot of these bands that are coming back and doing this stuff, they're just like, this is what made us. That's why we're coming back.
Yeah.
That's why you see Andrew WK coming back. It's like, he's like, I'm going to go play Furnace Fest because that was a good scene. And that was part of my development.
It was a fun time.
You know, there's nothing wrong with getting big. And there's nothing wrong with having these like great shows. But I think the difference of why Furnace Fest, like that thing kind of died. A lot of the agents weren't letting bands play those kind of things.
That's an interesting take. Yeah.
This whole, they're just like, well, you know, you can go to this Furnace Fest thing, but we're going to send you on this pay to play. You know, the label's like, oh, you can't do that because you're on Ozfest this year. And we're paying for it.
It did. It was like that weird time period around that, like when Furnace Fest stopped, like 2004-ish, around that time period where like MTV started taking like, oh, that like, because obviously it was getting popular at that time. The internet was also getting popular. MySpace was getting popular. The scene was really big on MySpace. Bands were all over. And of course, Ozfest kind of, they had that show and, you know, the Osbournes did the thing. And it was like, yeah, the pay-to-play kind of started stealing everything up, especially from like our little world. So I always kind of hated MTV for that. And then it turned it into like, you would see dudes dressed up on Next, like that show Next or whatever, the dating show, and they would be some bastardized version of like a scene kid, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it became like a joke, but, you know, it almost came like a joke.
But I mean, here's the thing, a lot of the, you know, labels and the people behind some of these bands were pushing that kind of stuff. Like that became the thing. It's like, you know, like some of the, and I'm not naming any names, and no one's at fault for this, you know, but it was like, you know, all of a sudden selling, you know, 30 or 50,000 records of abrasive, you know, metallic hardcore wasn't good enough because this other band went gold. Mm. So you know, now you have to achieve that or you failed. And that it really took a toll on a lot of bands that felt that if they weren't doing that, they were failing.
That is an interesting insight.
And that was something that, like, that was when we started, that was kind of when we stopped touring because we're just like, we're not doing that. Like, mm-hmm. we didn't want to be a part of that. We're like, yeah. We want to do what we're doing. Like, and, you know, like, we're not going to feel guilty because we're not having a gold records. That was never the goal.
It definitely is an interesting insight into, like, you know, looking back, because obviously we can all look back now and kind of piece everything together as to why things went the way they have. And like I say this with newer bands that I have on the podcast, it's nice that I feel like there is a resurgence of kind of like the metalcore scene in general. Like heavy music is kind of getting another wind here. And so there was like a lull, and I kind of attribute that lull starting with that kind of like bastardization of the scene in general. And then it became like a kind of a joke thing. And then people stopped, you know, I don't know. Like you said, the metalhead thing is also a thing. And it's different than like the hardcore scene used to be when I was a kid. So, yeah. So coming back to the festival thing, This Is Hardcore, I haven't checked that out yet. Cause obviously I live in Florida. If you were,
I didn't
tell you that. So
where are you at in Florida?
North Florida. I actually had Yashira on the podcast, guys that you've had a split with. So dude, we had Luke and Dan on.
Yeah. Love them. Love them.
Yeah. Speaking of which, I'll just ask you that question. You guys do splits with certain bands. What's the caliber? Like, what's the checklist of, like, how does a band get on a Zao split? You know what I'm saying? Like, what's the checklist?
We have to like them.
We just like it.
Interesting. Yeah, because you guys is
literally it. We're like, we really like this band, and
you've done it with a couple big ones. You know, Ludacris before they were Norma Jean. You had the Bleeding Through one, and then it was just interesting that you guys had the Yashira one a couple years ago too.
Yeah, we saw them.
We have a couple other things too that we can't talk about yet, but we have some ideas.
Yeah,
and discussions
with them involved.
No, different bands.
Oh, okay.
It'll be a surprise. It'll be a surprise.
Yeah. But, like, I remember it was literally just this. We played some Florida shows. Yashira was on the shows. We didn't really, like, we got to listen to them, and our, whatever, the booking agent, we were like, yeah, we like them, put them on, whatever. And then, like, I remember me, Dan, and Jeff watching them going, holy shit. I'm like, we were so just mesmerized by them.
Yeah.
And then the whole tour, you just like, dude, we fucking love your band. So that's it. I mean,
yeah, man. We talked about it when they were on the podcast. It was like, it's crazy. And it's like, kind of like cool how like they just like, cause Pete from Remembering Never does Ether Coven mm-hmm. now.
And which we love them too.
Yeah, yeah, and we're big fans of those too. Friend, yeah. Yeah, obviously, you know.
But
this band, this younger band from here, you know, Pete loves them. You guys love them. So it's weird how like they were getting their little feelers just out into like, you know, the world. But no, it was cool. And I was wondering what led to that, because I asked them what led to it, you know, so to get your side was.
We just love them.
I mean, yeah. Anytime we're doing shows, basically our booking agent will be like, here's the bands that I think will fit and that are interested. And we go through and we listen. And then we're like, okay, this is number one choice. You know, and a lot of times, like I said, like we'll listen, like, yeah, this band will fit with us. And I remember doing that with Yashira and I didn't think anything of it. I'm like, yeah, they sound good. And then when we saw them live, we were just all blown away.
Oh, yeah.
Like, just absolutely blown away. Like, they're on to something really special.
That's cool. Yeah. I mean, that's another Jacksonville band you guys, I mean, you play with a couple, but you know, you play with Evergreen too. They're another Jacksonville band.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Great. Love those dudes too.
One of our favorite bands to tour with.
Yeah. Well, dude, that's the thing about with us. Like, I always feel like such a dick saying this kind of thing, but like, dude, there's just no ego with us, man. None of us. Like, we literally just want to help anybody we can. We hope we get the favor back if people could help us. And that's always what I felt. Like, that, I think all of us look at playing music, it, like, you have to have a community that everybody works together. There's no like, oh, they're bigger, we're bummed out. But like, dude, I just want to be friends with every band we can be friends with. I want to like be as cool as humanly possible to every person that deserves to be us to be cool with, and build, you know, relationships and friendships. Like, that's like everybody that we work with now. Every person that's involved, like, it's just, we've made sure that they're like legitimate friendships. Like, everything that we do, we make sure that everybody that we just stay in contact with them and go out of our way to make sure that it's just always cool. And I think there's a lot of bands that do that, but I don't know why you'd even want to do this kind of thing without that mentality. Like, I never understood being a headliner for a tour and like being shitty to opening bands. Like, why? If you didn't want them to play, or if you didn't like them, why did you let them on the show in the first place? Like, to me, I would just rather be friends with everybody. So
it's whatever. Easier. It's easier that way.
Yeah. Like, and who are you? Like, who gives a shit?
Yeah. Right.
Like, literally, nobody's nobody, man. Like, I'm nobody. I'm so lucky that I get to even play music in front of anybody. So, like, I could never get it. I just never get it.
Well, it's something that people in the scene and everywhere have to deal with. It's not just, you know, not just with us in the hardcore metal scene.
Not true. Absolutely.
So I probably can't let you guys go without asking you, Jeff, since you obviously can't talk about the Zayo stuff or the splits of other bands coming up, maybe you can kind of like, you know, toss a little fatter nugget our way. Is there any from Autumn Ashes kind of things coming out, since you guys are playing Furnace Fest?
Right.
Do you guys have anything planned for, you know, specials?
Specials.
Not specials. Like, do you have any new music? Let's just say it out loud. New music.
Yeah, we're writing.
Nice.
There's writing happening. There's writing. And I feel safe saying this because I know, I think Brian Deneve just did a podcast recently and he talked about it. So I don't feel like I'm leaving the cat out of the bag. But yes, we are writing and there are some songs.
Nice.
And I think one or two of them, the plan was to play them at Furnace Fest. That might be the first time people hear a new From Autumn to Ashes song. There are songs in demo stage. It's happening. Now what that means, we don't know. We're not talking about album. We're just like, let's write some songs.
Toss some ideas.
I mean, maybe it'll be three or four songs that we finish up and they come out, whatever, as digital singles, whatever. We don't know. There's no plan.
Cool.
We're playing it real casual.
Well, we definitely probably should get, you know, you and Francis on, or you and someone else from the band, and we'll spend
Fran's a hard guy to track down, but I can try.
No, but we can, you know, we can get you guys on and spend some time talking about that band, because that also is a band from way back when. So yeah, it'd be interesting to go down memory lane with both of you guys again. But outside of that, man, I think we didn't cover everything by all means, but I don't want to keep you all night. But yeah, other than the record coming out, go ahead, Jeff.
Did you have any good questions from your
hesitant. All right.
I mean,
We'll run through it. How about that? I'm very hesitant.
We're up for a challenge.
I'm only going to do it because you guys are Lamb Goat alums, so you know what to expect.
Nothing is going to offend us, dude.
Nothing. I have posted some of the most brutal stuff about Zayo anonymously on the Lamb Goat comments.
So, yeah, good stuff. Were you bummed that we took the anonymous comments away, so you have to log in with your Facebook now and everyone knows it's you?
Once the comments disappeared from the article, so I was just like, because even the forum, that's too much for me. I can't.
Oh man, you gotta come play on that battle.
I have a screen name over there. I just haven't logged into it for a while.
Oh my God.
And I'll never say what it is.
I would be interested to know what it is. That's what I'll say. I was going to say, if you're just listening to this, come on, come play on the playground. Come to the forum on Leongo. Come play on the playground. I have to tell you guys, these are by far the most responses we have gotten from any of these IG question things. So, again, fair warning, I have not.
They're probably terrible.
Right. I have not even read any of these. All right. Someone said we should talk about the penis tie.
Oh, from All of Spill. I don't remember why that thing looked like a dick. But honestly, back then, like, it was very rare that we had, well, even now, like, dude, we like get artists to do covers because we like them. So we don't like say you have to do this. But I think that was a Clark Brothers design. And I don't even know who mentioned that the tie looked like a dick, but we all wanted it just to stay a dick, and they changed it.
Bummer. This is one that says Def asked about your size of your balls because you have melons. So that's just probably him telling you guys have big balls.
Cool.
It's probably Marty.
Yeah. when is the fear on vinyl going to be? Is that a thing going to happen, or?
Soon.
Okay. T-shirts. Soon. T-shirts of this. Oh, go ahead. Finish your thing. I don't want to cut that off.
No. Go ahead.
No.
I was just going to say very soon. That's all I'll say.
Cool.
Yep. That's all I know.
T-shirts of the self-released titled album, please.
Self-titled? You mean?
Mm-hmm. T-shirts of the self-titled album.
When we get to that one on a reissue,
We might.
Sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Not opposed.
Yeah.
There's a lot of religious ones in here. God was one.
That's okay.
Yeah.
depends on what it is. I mean.
Right. No. Yeah.
Dude, just shoot.
We might have a mind blowing answer.
It just says God. That's all it says as the topic.
Oh, it just says
bring
God?
Up God. Yeah, just bring up God.
Oh. Okay.
Bring up God. Okay.
Wrong with God. will you ever play UK Europe again once the vaccines are rolled out?
We want to do everything. Yeah. We'd love to do everything.
How many lineup changes has the band had?
17,000.
Yeah. We already kind of went into
that. I mean,
there's what?
Not as many as you think.
Actually,
Wikipedia is very wrong.
Yes.
Napalm Death had more.
Napalm Death had more.
They definitely had a
bunch. Napalm Death couldn't keep the same lineup from side A to side B of their first album. The B side has a different lineup than the A side.
It was recorded.
The band broke
time.
Up as you flip the record.
We should have brought that up with Barney. How do you keep things fresh writing albums after so many albums? Because you do have like an extensive discography at this point.
We just do whatever the fuck we want. Because that's it. I mean, honestly. Yeah, you can't worry about it. Like, you just, because I'm going to be writing anyway. So if I get to write something that somebody else gets to hear, cool. But if I like write something and it's just my dumb thing that I get to listen to, we don't look at it. Like, we just keep writing.
So how do you feel? I don't know if necessarily this is geared to both you guys, but Scott, maybe you can elaborate a little bit. How do you guys feel about being one of the most influential bands of the 90s?
Oh, I don't even think we are, but, we were influenced by so much of what was happening. There's so many bands that are super influential. I think I don't even think of it like that. Yeah. I think of it like we were lucky to be in a time when we got to build like a scene. So like, but the scene influenced us and like all these other bands influenced us and like straight up like metal bands that existed before anybody even thought there was going to be anything influenced us. Carcass influenced like everything. So like, I don't know. I guess it's hard for me to look at it that way.
Sure. Is Croatone about the colony that disappeared? I don't know if you would know that if Dan's told you.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, the disappearing Croatone, the colony that disappeared in Croatone, it is a That is the starting point. Yes.
Cool.
The song also isn't exactly about that, but that's the world that it lives in.
Yeah, it's because it delves into like mental like illnesses and like the whole record, I think, has a lot to do with that kind of like personal mental situations and all that kind of stuff. And I think that Dan kind of used that story as like a metaphor for the disassociation you feel. Like there's a lot of cool things going on, but that was definitely a beginning point, that story.
Cool. Were the streets really paved in gold?
I wouldn't know.
What are, I mean, again, this might be,
I do like the God, just bring up God because
yeah. I mean, that was going to happen. I mean, it's going to happen.
Yeah. Well, I'm surprised we haven't like, cause so Zayu hasn't been like, I'm like pretty militantly like atheist, but like the band hasn't been that for so long. It's, but the funny part for me is like, I love that people still talk about it.
It's crazy. Yeah. Cause like, I mean, obviously like it was more probably the earlier version of the band in general.
Yeah. Yeah. So cause like, dude, we talked about this before, like Blood and Fire has some brutal shit that Dan's talking about. Like it's not really, and Liberate is like very not centered around that stuff. Like there's some,
I mean, is the big JC, I don't think the big JC is even mentioned on Liberate.
No,
at all.
Yeah, I don't
ever
think.
Never, not a word or self, yeah. Any of them.
Yeah,
honestly, the most Christian lyrics on Blood and Fire were not written by Dan.
Yeah.
Boom.
Interesting.
They were left out. I think there's one or two songs that I think were technically Sean Jonas lyrics that were left over.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
Ooh. Most of some of the big Lies of Serpents and Ravaged Ritual are actually very anti like
religious,
organized religion. Yeah.
It's crazy how like that stigma will just continue to follow you throughout the time.
And it's fair. I mean, dude, like don't. Trust me, we're not lost on the whole stupid like weirdness of it. Like we definitely get it. Like the band started out full on spirit filled religious, and Dan and Russ, I mean, it wasn't like those guys came in and were like, not that. So it's not like offensive to even hear about it, or like, we totally get why people would still peg us that. It's a bummer. But like, I think that, you know, if you listen to shit now, like it's goddamn for sure. That's not not what's up.
Again, we already talked about the pioneers of the metalcore scene, so we can skip that question. Again, you may not know the answer to this one, but what are the lyrics to Suspension Suspend about?
Oh,
that's
a pretty brutal personal one.
Okay.
I mean, it's definitely...
I think Dan's talked about it.
Yeah. I think it was... It's a friend of his that committed suicide. And his way of dealing with, and dude, it's, you know, the man, Dan has had so much death in his life. So a lot of the songs kind of, a lot of his lyrics do kind of talk about how he gets through some of that stuff. Cause we've all had a lot of friends that have done that, but like Dan, I mean, there's so many people, so many like very like crucial people in his life that's happened to. So, but that one was, that's about a friend's suicide.
All right. This ask about Jesse being a Scientologist.
What the fuck? No, actually, But Jesse, we actually, all of us have an unbelievably great relationship now. So, and Jesse has like, he's like, if anything, probably more like meditative, like Buddhist sort of like really like really focused guy now. Like it's pretty impressive to see, like, cause I mean, he was struggling with a lot of stuff back when we were touring and all that. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of depression that I think got just not paid attention to because we were kids and we didn't understand it. But I think what I've seen of Jesse now, and like just now that we talk pretty regularly, No, he's definitely not a Scientologist, but he's for sure like
different.
Got him. Yeah, he got himself in a really awesome place that's really inspiring, actually.
And I don't know exactly why they want what they want out of this, but they're the same person. The same person asks, about Norma Jean kind of getting canceled. I guess what your thoughts with that is.
Well, dude, I'm like, okay, whatever. The dude said dumb shit. Like, I hate this whole cancel thing. Like, if you say dumb shit, I have every right not to listen to you anymore. Why can't I just not listen? Like, it's not even canceling. Like, when you say stupid shit, you have to understand that there are consequences for saying stupid shit.
And again, too, stupid shit is relative. Like,
sure.
You know, there's people that quit listening to us because we said, well, we're not a Christian band. They're like, I'll never buy your records again. It's we canceled. Got canceled by that. Those it's all relative. Like, whatever.
But
did they really get canceled?
Corey's been laying very low.
Corey's
been laying very low.
Well, because we'll do okay. So, from what I understand of the whole thing, the guy like made a joke about like when there was pretty high tension, with the police brutality stuff, and he did say something that was pretty obviously like, I mean, I think he came back and apologized for it. And then he also said that he didn't mean it that way. Well, I mean, it's pretty blatant when you see what he said. So I think what I don't like about this is like, there are things that people say and I'm sorry, like, no, but like the government is canceling you. Like, that's free speech to me is you're not going to get arrested for saying something dumb, but like, I'm not going to fucking listen to you anymore. Yeah. And like, people are going to call you out. Like, that isn't any, that's how it's always been. Like, if you say
here's
something,
the thing that I find this really interesting too, because a lot of people were making a big deal about how Every Time I Die made a comment about how they wouldn't play any festivals or shows Norma Jean was on. And they made a comment within that statement. They said, this is an ongoing rule. They already had that rule before what he did. Wow. And I can tell you full on, and I don't care. I'm not embarrassed about this. And it had nothing to do with what he said, and it's not cancellation. We were offered a tour with Norma Jean at one point that recently, within the past few years, before this happened, and we turned it down because not because of what he said, just because the general vibe. And I remember talking to a couple guys in the band, and the general vibe was like, I just don't want anything to do with that guy.
Yeah.
So this is a long running thing about people in the scene and the.
Are you talking about certain people of the band or just the band in general?
Well, like certain people.
Certain people in Zao or whatever don't want anything to do with him.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Got you.
So, and here's like the thing.
This has nothing to do with whatever comment he made on the Black Lives Matter.
Right, right. It's just like a thing that's going over on the years. Right.
This had been going on for several years.
Interesting.
And also, what drives me out of my mind. So like everybody acts like, well, conservatives are being canceled, right? Well, dude, I will happily debate anyone on the economics of what like conservatism and liberalism or progressivism would be. Like, I'm fine. We can have debates where like we come from a reasonable place. When you say shitty things, that's not, you can't expect people to be okay to listen to you. Like, nobody's
maybe
canceling.
They are.
Yeah. I mean, nobody's canceling you being a conservative, but like when you're like overtly being a shithead, dude, people are going to not listen to you.
Yeah.
And they're going to come at you and they're going to come after you. Like, I don't know why you wouldn't think you're going to say something. You got to be ready to take the responsibility of what you're going to say.
The internet,
and you may find a new crowd. You might find the people that agree with what you said, and now you have this. That's fine.
Well,
that's
dude, fine. I guarantee you, people
read the room.
Yeah,
know your audience.
People are going to listen to this, and they're going to be like, "Oh, well, looks like Zao's. What are they called?
Social justice.
Yeah, we've never wanted to hear bullshit. Like, I don't want to hear that kind of talk. All of us in the band have always been this way. Like, there's nothing new to like this whole like last 5 years of like how this cancel culture thing has happened. Like there are things about, to me, like free speech that, like, I'm an absolutist, but I think people should be able to say whatever they want. That doesn't mean consequences don't happen to you.
Right.
What that does mean is that the government is not going to come in. There's not going to be a police officer at your door the next day going, well, you said this, so you're going to jail. But what could happen is your whole fan base doesn't agree with you. And guess what? They don't like you anymore.
Right.
I'm curious as to happen. And that's been from the beginning of time. Yeah. You know?
Yes, that's how it's always been.
If you piss off your audience or your customer base, they're mm-hmm. going to quit buying your product.
Yeah. Like Coke, with Twitter.
In the 80s, Coke changed their formula and everyone quit buying it. Like, and Coke wasn't canceled. It's like, we don't like what you're doing. We're not buying it anymore.
Yeah.
And they changed the formula back. And,
I like how we associated the Norma Jean thing with the Coke changing.
Yeah.
That's a good one. But
well, I mean, if you have enough people to like the new Norma Jean stance or whatever, then yeah, go do your thing.
It's one of those things where it's like the internet and social media and, you know, doing things like this where in the back of my head, like, you know, when I'm interviewing bands like you guys, you know, we're documenting some kind of like scene history in the back of my dream like mind. So but it's interesting to find out these things about the behind the scenes stuff. Like where you don't necessarily know, I don't want to keep using Corey as an example, but you don't know who these people are outside of just mm-hmm. seeing them on the internet or hearing them over the, you know, in the music and stuff like that. But it's also kind of a bummer when you find out that certain people that you may, you know, have liked or looked up to as a fan, you know, R. Kelly status. You can't vibe with R. Kelly after you find out everything that he's done. It's like, you know, it's a bummer. It's a bummer. But, the internet, I think, will weed everything out. And I know people hate the cancel culture and everything like that, but it is doing some positive as well as some negatives. You know, it's not a...
Yeah, I mean, I think there are definitely times where things get a little bit overblown, sure. Mm-hmm. But I think the overall feeling of like, hey, guess what? Like, we're finally getting like, you can't say this kind of shit anymore. You can't be this kind of that type of vibe isn't going to work with us. Like I actually like the thought of these people that have been, I don't even know how to say it. I'm trying to think of the best way to explain it, but like there are things that I think don't belong in an area where, and I think that the overall like scene that we live in is more progressive. So you have to recognize that, you know, and I think that it's always been that way. Like counterculture is that, mm-hmm. you know, where, you know, people are fighting for everyone to have the same like rights and equality is a huge important thing. So, and it should be like, that's actually something that we should be striving for all the time. So, you know, if you have different, nobody's saying you can't have different viewpoints, but when your viewpoints are so backwards to what I think like is so obviously justifiable. You know, like you want like the Black Lives Matter thing, like that shouldn't even have be like a weird thing for people.
Yeah, no, I get what
you're like. Are you serious? Like, I get it's real easy to go back and like look at all the different situations that have happened, but like if you can't recognize that like Black people get treated differently and that has to stop, then why are you in this scene? Or why are you even like as an artist? Like I think most artists would look at that and go like, we want everybody to be the same. I want everybody to have that same opportunity. And you can recognize like how people haven't had certain opportunities. It blows my fucking mind.
Oh no, no.
It always will.
We got shit. I remember when there was the big thing, which we ended up pulling it down because of, not because of the person, but I remember there was the one thing where everyone was doing the social media blackout during Black Lives Matter. I pulled it down for a different reason and it had nothing to do. But I remember people were giving a shit for it. And I'm like, we literally have a black guy in the band. Like, they were just like, oh, jumping on the bandwagon. I'm like, our lifelong friend is one of these people.
Right.
Yeah. Like dude, you know, this like, is.
Like, are you kidding me? Like,
I know.
Like, oh, you're jumping on the social justice. Like, no, like, we have personally toured with and like I have toured with and without Russ. And I see the difference about how we get treated in certain areas of the country.
Sure,
we walk in when Russ is there versus when Russ is not there. Like, we personally have witnessed this stuff.
Yeah. For sure, yeah, it's everywhere. For sure, we can't end this bad boy on that. I'm just gonna go through the rest of these questions. I'm sure we're gonna go on some side tangents, but that way we're not just in doom and gloom all day long. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
What was the most personally? What was the most inspirational thing you witnessed slash learned in the pandemic?
Wow. The most inspirational.
Go ahead. If you have one.
Honestly, how important interaction with other people is. Like, you really take all of that for granted. You take all of it for granted because you think, oh, well, I'll just see my friend next tomorrow. I think like not being able to have that easily like interaction with other people is really, really detrimental to like to people, to yourself, you know.
That was kind of where I was going too. Like, yeah, that was the big thing.
Yeah, I think a lot of people have that.
Yeah, I think everyone, the fact that you couldn't be, you know, you take for granted, like being able to just go to your parents' house and like have dinner. And it was like, you know, when this first started, there were three or four months that you just couldn't do that.
Yeah. Some people are still not doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is totally understandable. Like I, you know, we see our family sparingly. We're still, you know, we wear the masks around them and, because they're a little older, so we're really careful with that stuff. But yeah, like all of that, man. Holy shit! Like not the ease of interaction you take for granted so much.
Hmm. Best and worst things about touring / playing shows in your 40s.
Ooh.
I don't know. It's weird. Like I actually enjoy traveling and playing shows more now than I did in say my 30s.
I'd have to agree.
Cause I think we've gotten better at it. Like, and like we've gotten better at understanding how to travel comfortably. And
makes sense.
Yeah. Like we've just gotten better at running the shows and better at like, cutting out bullshit that we don't need and learning to enjoy ourselves in relaxing ways.
Well, that's, I think, a big thing. Sense. Yeah. I think the big thing for me is like when you're doing it how we were before and in my 20s and in my 30s, like I think you don't actually really appreciate it because you think it's just going to be there. And then with our age now, and we've self-inflicted our own stopping. So that's one thing, but like, man, I just appreciate the fact that we can still get to play. So like now when we go out and play, I soak everything in. Like there's never really a time that I get into like I'm not in a bad mood ever because like I just appreciate the ability to do it. And I think that like all of us have that same, like, man, we're so happy that we get to still do this. And I mean, you got to take care of yourself a little bit better because you're older, but that's, you know, that's about it.
Turning into.
We also play when we want to and how often we want to. So we never feel like, cause we don't have a record label to answer to or anybody. Cause we are the label. Mm-hmm. So it's a totally different vibe. And so we do what we're comfortable with. Like,
good. Best beers during COVID.
Yeah.
That's best a follow-up. Beers? Yeah, that's a follow-up question to the same question.
Ooh. See, that's the thing. I actually I've had a beer drought since COVID.
Okay, well, that could be your answer.
Because most of my hookups for beers, which were places around Brooklyn that I frequented, I can't go to. Mm. So I ended up being like, what does the corner bodega or whatever, you know, the grocery store near me have on stock? Luckily, some of my grocery stores have some Brooklyn or New York area, you know,
beers,
craft beer yeah. stuff on hand. But it's usually like the stuff that you would normally get.
I gotcha.
Honestly, I've been drinking.
I hate to toot our own horn.
Yeah,
do our it. Beer.
Yeah, holy crap.
I hate to toot our own horn, but yeah, our beer that we just
Croton.
Did.
Yeah, it's pretty sick. But nice. Dude, funny, all I've been drinking recently is Corona. So I don't know why.
It's cheaper, you know what I mean? They got some bad marketing cheaper, out there right now.
And it's kind of whatever. But yeah, the Croton beer that, oh my gosh. Oh, well, it's unfair too, because we like all got to like taste it out and had like everything that we all loved in one beer. And it like it was the weirdest thing ever because all of us agreed on like everything.
I'll have to try it out. I don't really do craft beers that often, delicious. But I'll definitely try it. Do you guys still have your CDs in Christian bookstores? I would assume
no.
Some of the catalog, no.
I don't think, and here's why I don't think. I don't think any of the older albums are all out of print. Everything is pretty much out of print. All the solid state stuff, even the Ferret stuff, it's out of print. You can't get it.
Will there Our be a reissue stuff, for no. this for any of those stuff? For any of those releases, have they been bought up by any bigger label or anything like that with Ferret? Or?
Yeah, all the solid state stuff is owned by Capitol. All the Ferret stuff is owned by Warner. But the physical there are no physical CDs floating around unless they're extras left over.
I know. I'm trying to find them.
We do not push it. In fact, when we were on Ferret and the Fear came out, we were pretty much blacklisted from the Christian bookstores.
Which is good. Yeah, that's how we wanted it. So whatever.
The Christian bookstores offered, if we said we were a Christian band, they would put the record in. We just had to say we were. Didn't matter what was on the record. And we're like, wait. So you're a Christian distributor and you're telling us if we lie, we'll sell it to your people.
Well, we know you have a market here. Yeah, so we can profit off of
and
that.
And we probably would have sold a lot more records doing that. But we're like, no, that's not very Christian of you.
Especially if people still are confused on if you're a Christian band or not. You know, you would definitely have pulled in a little more sales. Speaking of which, having knowledge of the sacred text, do you believe we have been and or are in the end of times?
Jesus Christ.
Oops. I mean literally.
dude, if I can't get past the whole sacred text thing. I'm still lost on that.
The chosen bands get the sacred text given to them. You know what I mean?
Oh, is that what it is? I have a bridge to sell you to.
No, I would say that I thought the end of time stuff was overblown, but I mean, what we've been witnessing recently is pretty. I mean, if you wanted to sell me a conspiracy theory right now about the end of times, I might start raising an eyebrow a little bit. Like, I don't know, maybe.
Cool. The last one.
But that doesn't.
Go ahead, Jeff.
No, nothing. I'm still trying to wrap my head around that last one.
Again, I said, I'm not. I didn't read these prior, so I'm just shooting.
No, that's what we like. I'm so in.
Okay. So the last one, we've kind of touched base on a lot of the things that people asked. But the last one is, this was specifically for Dan, so I don't know if you guys could answer this one. But has he ever done a Zao tattoo in his shop?
Yes, actually, I can tell you the sickest one he's ever done.
I mean, so, I would assume fans would just travel like Mecca to get a tattoo.
It's not.
For them.
From what I understand, it's not as, because Dan is pretty specific and he like has clients that he only works with. So it's not real easy just to like do that. But we had a friend that his name's Chad. I don't want to give too much, but super, super amazing guy. And he had Dan do the Z cross on his fucking face.
Oh, wow.
Like on his face. And I couldn't believe anybody would want to do that. But that's, yeah, that to me, that's the most intense one. He's, and Dan
actually has a standing rule that he usually doesn't give what he calls job killer tattoos.
Right.
Like he doesn't tattoo the face or the fingers or, but I apparently this guy had a pretty much was already job killered out and was so dead serious, and Dan did it. Yeah. And he had a show we did in, did he come to, I think it was it Orlando?
Yeah, he was in, I think it was a Florida show. Yeah.
Yeah. The last time we played in Florida on the, with Yashira, I want to say it was Orlando.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. He was there.
Is he from that area kind of thing, or did he just show up?
He's from like the South
area. I think he lives in Georgia. He was trying to set something up for us in Georgia at one point.
Yeah.
Well, we ran the gauntlet, gentlemen, of the internet questions, at least from...
Dude, I can't believe there weren't more brutal, fucked up ones.
Well, I didn't ask you the ones off the message board.
Well, dude, what are we doing? What are we doing here?
Man, all right. I haven't even pulled it up. I'll pull it up and we'll knock them out quick. I can't do one if I'm doing, you know what I mean?
We'll do the worst. I was going to ask you to do the worst.
But I don't know what would be the worst. You know what I'm saying? God, there's so much.
Yeah, I don't even know. Nothing will be the worst. I don't even care.
We've heard
and seen it all.
The thread will get hijacked. You know what I'm saying? And then they'll talk about something completely different for a lot of it. So I have to go through it. Hold on.
Well, wait, is Lamgus the one that always talks about how we wish we were Azalea dying, right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think that's it.
Yeah, that's where the whole Azalea dying versus Zayo argument was raging for years.
Yeah.
See, this one says, how awesome is our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ?
Oh, yeah. Okay. That's pretty typical. More clever. Why can't people...
They want us to ask you about the other band, Zayo.
Oh, the French one?
Yeah, the French
one. Here's the thing.
I'm actually a fan.
Dude, yeah, they're awesome.
Yeah. They're an indirect offshoot of the band Magma, which I'm a big Magma fan. So, yeah.
How does that work that you both have the same name? You know what I mean? How does that
work? Well, they don't exist anymore. They were like...
I mean, they might, but I think they pretty much only existed in France. And
yeah.
It gets real weird with all that stuff. Like, I don't think either it would be up to them to potentially sue, but who do they sue? And then it's an international lawsuit. Mm-hmm. And does it even hold up? And I don't know. We just kind of roll and don't worry about it.
They can be Zayo FR from here on out if they ever want to come back.
Yeah. Dude, we'll change our name. I don't care.
ask them if the race of standings is still about death, or race of standing still about death.
Probably.
I mean, that would be the safe bet. That's like betting on the, you know, Patriots and the Tom Brady.
Or Tom Brady. Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of these comments, I'm sure you're going to go over to the website and read them at some point, but a lot of them are like, I've heard of this band. So, and then they were debating about your music a little bit, I guess.
Is it?
That's what people on the internet will do.
Yeah. Oh my God. See, they're going back and forth with one other person. So hold on. ask them if the Deftones ever talked about taking them on tour.
No.
No.
But at one point, I think Stephen Carpenter like mentioned Blood and Fire as a record he liked in some interview. And I think Jesse met that dude, but I don't think that was ever, not since, I mean, we've never been talked to by the Deftones. I like the Deftones.
It's weird how often they come up on this podcast. You know, like every podcast, someone's got a Deftones story or, I love the Deftones.
Yeah, they're awesome. They're good. Crazy. I'm in.
And he also says Angels Without Wings is probably your best song overall.
Cool. Thank you.
Yeah, in his opinion, I assume. Ask about the tattoo business, but Dan's not here, so necessarily I don't know if you can speak on that.
Yeah,
but feel free.
I don't even know what.
We don't even really know.
Yeah. I think he's doing okay. Dan always is doing okay.
You don't hate Jesse Smith. We've already got into that.
Absolutely not.
Right. Okay. That was
I was just texting him what, like 3 days ago?
Yeah.
A lot of this is just talking about their favorite albums with you guys. So I'm trying to get through it. Okay. Yeah. Nope. I'm not going to ask that last one. All right.
No, do it.
Oh,
are you
my
kidding
God,
me?
Dude,
ask it. Do it.
We're brave. We've
seen
it.
I don't know if I should.
All.
First off, I don't know if I should because, A, this is like a new gimmick character that's jumped onto the fucking message board lately. But how many?
Just do it.
All right. How many of the members of Zao were diddled by their youth pastors? And I used a different term for diddle.
I don't know. I never talked to anybody about that.
That's good.
But there is a Zao song about being diddled by a youth pastor.
Yes. Holy shit, you are correct.
Which song are we talking about in general?
If These Scars Could Speak.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
maybe that's where that came from. I don't know why this gimmick would know that.
I think that's. I'm pretty sure that's in the documentary. That was Dan's girlfriend at the time while he was on tour. Her youth pastor raped her.
Bummer. That is no good.
No, that was one of those. Scott, you can correct me if I'm wrong, and I think that's one of those situations where the song subject had to be lied to Solid State.
Yeah, there were a few on Liberace.
You guys actually told them it was about something other than what it was.
Yeah, we had to.
Does that come up often? Or is it because that label is a certain kind of label?
It's because of the label and the contract.
Yeah. Well, so at once, like, that's the weird thing about Solid State, even like now, that they don't seem to be so much a religious label, but they definitely are like they wanted more of a positive type of thing.
I mean, I definitely thought they were strictly religious label, and and I love a lot of those bands, and I love a lot of the bands they still are on there.
And I mean, I don't think most of the bands that they did sign were religious bands because I don't think many other labels were giving those bands a shot. So like Tooth and Nail was one of the labels, one of very limited amount of labels that were giving bands the opportunity. But I mean, from what I understood, Brandon Ebel didn't start that as a Christian label. He started that as like a straight, he was into punk and he like wanted to start a label, and it wasn't really that, but he did want positive messages and all that kind of stuff. And it ended up being that for, I mean, if you think that's a positive message or whatever, you know, a lot of the bands ended up being that way. A lot of the lyrics on Liberace, I mean, Savannah's about a porn star. Scars That Speak was about that. There's a lot of dark, but that's the thing about it, dude. There's like a lot of, like, Dan writes a lot about dark things, but there's always like a hope in it. Yeah. You know, it's not like he's not writing about, you know, Savannah. He wasn't writing about that to glorify or like exploit the fact that this woman, you know, had a car accident and just was disfigured and couldn't live because her whole life livelihood was based around her looks. What that song's trying to say is like, we got it as a society. Why would we even let that happen to someone? So like, you know, like there's always like hope in what he's trying to, you know, his perspective or his, like, even just sometimes it's just his observation. It's not necessarily like he has a perspective. He's just like observing, like, wow, isn't this fucking weird? You know, like, what do you think? This is weird to me, so I'm going to talk about it. So, but yeah, we couldn't tell them specifically, like, this is what he was talking about.
Interesting. Well, damn, I feel like I told y'all before, we shoot for 45 minutes. We have now gone like an hour over that. So we are pulling we're pulling uncharted territory for the last. I mean, we used to do these long ones. No, we used to do these long ones. But I feel that because you guys are in the band you're in, the fans obviously are going to be older, wanting longer content anyway. So,
cool.
I mean, I feel like we could keep going on, but I don't want to. Because I have to eat dinner, and I'm sure you guys have to eat dinner, and everyone's hungry, and it's like almost 9 o'clock. So
I'm gonna have some coffee.
We're gonna
I stay up all night.
We're gonna cut it. We're gonna cut it short here, and we're gonna end on somewhat of a positive note, not more.
Let's
so
do
like,
it.
You know what we were trying to end on prior, but guys, it was great to have you on. I'm sure we will have you on again at some point later on down the line. Jeff, obviously, I was sincere when I was talking about the FATA podcast. It'd be good to do it before.
I'll hook you up with those guys.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you're more than welcome to be on that as well, obviously, because you and Francis would be a decent episode. But again, I know Francis is tough to get a hold of. I'm not going to hold you to it. But I look forward to seeing you guys in person. Do a high five, you know, at the Furnace Fest. I'll be there. I already got my ticket, even though I'm probably going to do some media dealio there. I just made sure that I had a ticket.
Awesome.
But yeah, and kudos to us, boys, for going an hour 42 without talking about, hey, did you write your damn record during COVID? Hey, what are you doing during COVID? Like,
yeah,
most of the podcasts I've had recently are just like, hey, COVID. So it was a breath of fresh air to not really talk about that, guys.
It was. And thank you so much for having us, dude. Like, I'm so happy to do these things.
Oh, well, we'll definitely get you guys on. Now that I have a better way to contact you, I won't have to go through the band email because I sent that weeks ago. And I think I remember talking to Yashira about, like, damn, it would be really cool to have those guys on. So I'm glad that it eventually came into fruition.
That's all my fault.
I'm not blaming anybody. No one's getting blamed. No one's getting blamed, Jeff. Don't worry about that. I'm just, you know, you got a band email on the Facebook. I don't expect it to be responsive. You know what I mean? I would assume everyone gets emails constantly, and I would. When I email,
we're usually pretty good.
Yeah, but when I email bands, I assume that like they're gonna, especially if I'm emailing the email off of like the website or the Facebook and not going through a PR person, it's usually like a 50-50 crap shot that they'll even get that message, you know? So who knows? But anyway, I appreciate it nonetheless. We definitely will do this again, and I can't wait to see you guys in September.
Chill out.
Awesome, man.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
This is Krista Makes, guitarist and vocalist for Less Than Jake, and host of Krista Makes a Podcast, a songwriting podcast where every week I'm joined by an amazing guest to break down the writing, recording, and release of one iconic song from their career. In our giant evergreen back catalog of episodes, we've had rock legends such as Dee Snider and Huey Lewis, punk rock favorites like Mark Hoppus, Fat Mike, and Brett Gurewitz, and up-and-coming artists of today, such as Liz Stokes of the Beths and Genesis Owusu. We've had guests from all genres and styles of music, and I guarantee that if you peruse our back catalog, you'll see several episodes that'll make you say, man, I gotta hear that. Whether you're a fan of music or a creator of music yourself, you'll take away a whole new appreciation for the songs you know and love. Krista Makes a Podcast is available for free on all the places you could possibly listen to podcasts, and new episodes come out every Monday.